Okay, so let's get started if you want to get the recording going. And great. Terrific. Well, welcome, everyone. Thank you so much. My name is Robin Gross. I'm the chair of the Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group. And thank you for coming and participating today. We've got a few things on our agenda. We're going to hear from the constituencies about their morning meetings. And we can talk for a few minutes about outreach to other stakeholders. And then we'll review some ICANN policy input opportunities and discuss possible statements that we might want to make in either in the public forum and the open comments that are open now. And then we can talk about prepare for our meeting with the board this afternoon. We're meeting with the board this afternoon from 14:30. Nope, I take that back. We're meeting with the board at 3:30. Yep, sorry, 3:30. We're meeting with the board in the Congress 2 room. Okay, so let's get started, and let's have an update from our morning meetings. We have two. Excuse me, Bill has a. Okay, we'll need some microphones. That's right. Thank you. Can we have the microphones to come up? So unfortunately, we only have two microphones for everyone, and we need to speak into the microphones because the meeting is being recorded and transcribed. So please use the microphone. Don't just
we play well together.
Speak
check
out.
Check.
There you go.
Okay, go ahead.
Phil. Check check. How funny.
Check check.
Yep.
Slovak Slovak. I'm Bill Drake, and I'm from the University of Zurich, and I'm a member of the GNSO Council representing NCSG. And a member of the Uralo Board of Directors.
And who are
you? Oh, hello. I'm Adam Peake, and I work for Glocom in Tokyo and a member of the NCUC.
Hello. My name is Rafik. I am a counselor for the NCUC in the GNSO Council. I am also working in Japan, but I'm not Japanese, for sure.
Wendy Seltzer, yet another NCSG counselor, and law professor, legal researcher, interested in freedom of expression online.
Hi. I am David Cake. I am the interim chair of the non-commercial users constituency, and I am also the chair of Electronic Frontiers Australia, and I am not a councillor.
Edward Morris from the University of Leeds.
Hi, I am Radka McGregor, and I am at Metropolitan University here in Prague, IP lawyer.
Roy Ballester from St. Thomas University School of Law. And a librarian.
I'm Adam Freeman from Oxford University. I'm a student studying internet governance.
Hi, my name is Alain Béranger. I'm chair of the new constituency in the stakeholders group, NPOC. And when I don't do that, I'm retired.
Hello, I'm Emily Weissenberg from the University of Oslo. I'm a postdoctoral researcher there at the NRCCL, Norwegian Research Center for Computers and Law.
Hello, my name is Erich Beckhofer. I work for the University of Vienna and doing some research in internet governance.
Hi, my name is Tobias Mahler. I'm also at the Norwegian Research Center for Computers and Law, working with Emily.
Is that everyone? Oh, over here. Sorry. Can we have the microphone over here, please? Thank you.
Hi, Joy Lidicote, NCUC member and GNSO councillor from Association for Progressive Communications.
Great. Thank you. Welcome. And I see we've got Rob Hogarth over here also with the staff. Thank you for coming. Okay, so let's get started with our agenda. We're going to first hear from the chairs of the two constituencies in the non-commercial stakeholder group, NPOC and NCUC. Alan, would you like to give us a quick update about your meeting this morning? Absolutely.
Hi, everyone. I'll just jump up my notes. Yeah, we had a meeting this morning. It was a short meeting, about an hour and 15 minutes, and we did two things. We did a short seminar, a workshop on e-fundraising and for NGOs. We had two speakers from. We tried to attract other constituencies into our work, so we had Angie Graves from the business community that addressed the interface user issue of fundraising, and we had Kiran Malancharouville from the intellectual property constituency, who addressed the legal issues of e-fundraising. The interesting what I noticed is that of course e-fundraising is the fastest growing fundraising segment in North America, but it's also the smallest, and the developing country members are mostly interested in fundraising, don't have the bandwidth nor the platform facilities to do it. So it's a work in progress. So there was a lot of interest. We'll be posting the two presentations on our website. The second thing I did, and I'll take advice from Robin, this, I gave an activity report of our constituencies, which is what I will also give this afternoon, or depending on the time and the I can change the version. So it takes about 5 minutes for me to give it. What do you think?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, thanks. So, in fact, at San Jose, we and NPOC Executive Committee was just designated an interim. We weren't elected, and the first thing that happened after San Jose was elections were held, and so we have a slate of executives now from Canada, the U.S., and Costa Rica. Our membership numbers. We have a total of 48 members now. It's made up in different groups. We have 25, which are properly approved members. We have 12 where Robin and I are working on getting the application through. We have three under contention. We have three new ones since, which won't be a problem. And I've received 5 requests for membership since I've arrived in Prague. The NPOC is in a strategic partnership with the Global Knowledge Partnership Foundation, GKPF. The Global Knowledge Partnership Foundation is a 14-year-old organization. I facilitate the partnership because I'm on the board of trustee of this foundation that was incorporated 2 years ago in Spain under European law. And it's an organization that regroups mostly NGOs that are interested in the developing countries, interested in using the internet for social purpose, poverty eradication, and related objectives. We were able to hold our first event without budget at the World Summit on Information Society, WISIS 2012 in Geneva. And I wasn't there, but I hear it was very successful. We've engaged NPOC will be managing and coordinating a new publication applied research publication on the subject of NGOs and internet governance. It will be the editorial board is formed. Most of the authors are lined up, as well as an academic journal out of a university in British Columbia, Canada. And I'm pleased to report that this publication actually includes both on the editorial board and on authors members of NPOC, but also members of NCUC. So you could say that it has a stakeholders group flavor, but we also have external authors. So we'll keep you posted on its progress. We did our first Africa outreach event. Actually, I should say effort, because it was virtual. And we did it in collaboration with and support from the Africa Manager of Regional Relations, Anne-Rachel Linné, using the Afrinic.net list and media. And by breaking a few arms, we were able to get it done in four languages, which was important. So English, of course, French, Portuguese, and Arabic. So that was satisfying, and that should reach a good most of Africa. We have a participation of four NPOC members in Prague. That's a lot for us, because we have no budget, but we did it with external support. Members here are from USA, Gambia, Switzerland, and Canada. What we did since San Jose, and that's my activity report, is for that date, we prepared the proposal for a program on ICANN call for FY 13, and that budget was it was cut a lot, but it was subsequently approved by the board 3 days ago, 2 days ago. The focus of our program for financial 13 will be outreach. Nothing surprising: webinars, recruitments, and workshops, but not workshops on our own standing alone, because we can't afford to do that. But workshops where we will piggyback on other ICT conferences, and the first workshop, the subject has been determined. It will be fundraising training for NGOs. I don't know if it's a matter of if it's easy to be small when you're transparent, or transparent when you're small, I mean, but we decided to put our statement of revenues and expense to June 15 on the website for the public, so every cent that we've received is accounted for. And finally, we had an interesting event. One of the NPOC member received this year the prestigious Asturias Prize. It's not quite the Nobel Prize, but this organization already had four Nobel Prize. So that was a good European-based prize too. That's I named the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Society. So it's just a kudo to them, and we had nothing to do with it, of course, but we're pleased to have them as members. So that's it, Robin. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate that update. Does anyone have any questions for Alan, real quick, before we move on? Alrighty, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
If we could now hear from David Cake, who is the chair of the non-commercial users constituency, and he can give us an update this morning.
Yep. I'll be relatively brief, because I think majority of the people in the room were already at our meeting this morning. So we discussed a range of policy issues. We have resolved, in particular, the of great concern to this week has been the RIA register agreement renegotiation. We found that on the whole that issue has involved a lot of law enforcement pushing for powers they probably shouldn't have, and very little recognition of the various laws that cover privacy and data retention that would reduce that would frankly make a lot of what the law enforcement agencies are asking for illegal in a lot of jurisdictions. So we resolved as a constituency to send a letter to draft a letter to several of those privacy agencies asking for them to be basically bringing the negotiations to their awareness and asking for them to be involved. Those we're starting with, in particular, the Article 29 Working Group of the European Union, but we will be aiming at other privacy agencies, particularly in the US, Canada, and the UK, which are which represent the law enforcement agencies that have been most active within ICANN on this issue. We have no objection to that becoming as far as I understand, we have no objection to that NCUC letter becoming an NCSG letter if NPOC are involved, but certainly we've set up a drafting team and are going to push ahead with that one. We covered a number of other policy issues, but we had certainly on the International Red Cross, IOC, another IGO issue. Our policy discussion worked out that that's a very complicated area, and we still don't have agreement within our stakeholder group. But I think we're in general agreement that the process so far has been very messed up, and that there's a long way to go towards their sort of policy resolution on those issues. We also discussed our internal outreach outreach efforts. In particular, we are organising an outreach effort before the Toronto ICANN meeting, and we talked a bit about the practicalities and logistics of that. That will be concentrating on the cybersecurity issue and a few others. I don't want to go into too much detail about it, but certainly we'll be reaching out to a lot of people beyond the constituency to act as speakers and so on at that event. What else should I discuss? We covered a number of other policy issues. We're concerned about the consumer metrics proposal before the GNSO. We don't think we're in broad agreement with the idea, but there are quite a lot of devil in the detail with which metrics and what they're measuring and what applicant behaviour they are considering good and bad, registrant behaviour they are considering good and bad. We're considering discussing about broadening some issues beyond current ICANN events. In particular, there was discussion about there are proposals within the IETF for draft floating for draft proposals for alternate internet DNS routes, which we think is of concern, and we should get onto that one straight away. We can discuss a range of other proposals. If anyone, is there anything else that I have forgotten to mention? Anybody?
Great. Thank you very much, David. Anyone have any questions for David? All righty. Thank you. Yes. Microphone over here, please.
Before I ask my question, I forgot to make a statement that in our outreach, we, of course, expect to call on the other constituency and our stakeholders group to broaden our resource base, but also our expertise base. My question is, for that, it's very quick to do an outreach event before Toronto, given it's during the summer, but I'm glad you're doing that, and I'm just offering our collaboration if we can contribute in any way, either speakers or otherwise. And also, if you want to do anything pre-Toronto, well, that's my backyard and I can help.
Thank you very much, Alan. I think we have the logistics of that event seem to be reasonably under control, but we certainly will be, I'm sure there will be things for speakers and well, great. Robin is in fact organising that event, so I'm sure she can speak to that.
I'm sorry, is there a question for me?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right, thank you very much. Thank you, David. Let's move on the agenda. The first item to discuss is NCSG outreach to other ICANN stakeholders. Is Mary here?
No.
No? Okay. Well, this was something I was hoping Mary would discuss with the group, but I guess she's not here. Okay, so this is about how we can be more effective here at ICANN, and one of the ways of doing that is really trying to reach out to a lot of the other stakeholder groups and spend time explaining the issues that we care about to them and getting them to understand our issues. I think a lot of times we spend a lot of time amongst ourselves and talking amongst ourselves, and I think there's a lot of value in really trying to reach out and go talk to the registrars, go talk to the registries, go talk to people in the CSG about what the issues are that we care about, and really try to help broaden the relationships and the communications that we've got with the other stakeholder groups, just to try to get a better, so they can understand us better and we can understand them better. Does anyone have anything they want to add on this topic? Yes, Joy. Can we have a microphone over here, please?
Thanks. Well, a couple of things. One is, I think that it would be useful to be talking with NPOC members, for example, about the outreach work that you're doing, so that we can collaborate on that. There's nothing worse than duplicating unnecessarily meetings, particularly for other constituency groups. Secondly, I think if there are some key messages from NPOC on particular topics or on NCUC, I think it's useful if we know them mutually so that we can articulate them if asked about. So those were some thoughts. The other thing is, I guess, a question really is whether there are some particular constituencies we think it would be useful to be trying to build relationships with. We've talked a lot in some other forums about ALAC, but I'm wondering if people have particular perspectives on some priorities, for example, that we should be focusing on, and if so, perhaps you could talk more about that.
Bill, did you have something you were going to say on this topic? No?
No. Okay.
Could we have a microphone over here, please? Great. Thank you.
Hello, this is Bill Drake. The question of cooperation with other stakeholder groups always gets complicated. We always say that it's important to try to do it, but then when it comes to actual council discussions and decisions, the possibilities often seem to narrow. Certainly there are some cases where, for example, with law enforcement and some of those issues, some cooperation with the registrars would seem possible. I also had a conversation yesterday with somebody from the registry stakeholder group who asked me about the possibility of trying again on the outreach task force proposal, saying that they felt that actually the registries would support it. So there was one stakeholder group that doesn't, and my suggestion was, well, if we can't do it all in terms of all four stakeholder groups, it's still possible to have some cooperation and dialogue on various issues amongst particular groups. And he certainly seemed open to that. So it could be that even with the registries, there are some possibilities of outreach. We have some colleagues there with whom certainly a number of us have good working relationships. Within the House, it becomes more difficult, unfortunately. CSG, we have been in alignment on some issues, but more often than not, in recent times, we found ourselves in taking different positions. So that's a bit more complicated. So I would certainly suggest that with the contracted parties, at a minimum, we could make a greater effort. And, of course, as we've talked about before yesterday in the meeting, ALAC it remains interested in doing stuff, and there were concrete proposals for some joint statements on globalization and outreach issues and so on made yesterday that I think we should definitely follow up on. We have a group that's expressing, yes, we are ready to cooperate. We are ready to jointly say things. So we should definitely, I would think, give that some priority. The last point I would make is the GAC. We have opened up relations with some members already. We had a good conversation with the U.S. government yesterday, and I just spoke with the European Commission representative, who said that he would love to meet with us. The problem is we're trying to find a time. If nothing else works, we might talk at the reception tonight. So there are governments and there are stakeholder groups with whom dialogue and some coordination and cooperation is possible. It's a matter of having the bandwidth. We're all a bit spread thin, and what would make that more effective, obviously, is to get more hands on deck, get more people involved in sharing the loads, and then that would free up some energies to be able to do these things more precisely.
Thank you, Bill. You've kind of hit on where I wanted to go with this. You are the NCSG liaison to at-large, and we don't have liaisons with any other stakeholder groups or with GAC or anything like that. And I'd like to just ask the question, do you think we should? Do you think it would be helpful for someone to be a liaison to the registries or take, you know, responsibility to try to get that channel of communication going, and so we know when there's an issue we can go to a particular person to try to handle that relationship? Yes, Wendy.
Wendy Seltzer. I've been serving as informal liaison with the registrars, having some conversations with them, and I'll be talking with them for a bit this afternoon as well.
Great. So we've got a sort of a liaison with the registrars. What do others think? Do you think that might be worth doing? Yes, Joy.
Well, just a practical suggestion. I mean, perhaps what we should start thinking about is inviting other people to come to these meetings during ICANN. If we're having a thematic, you know, discussion topic we think they're particularly interested in, just as we did with the registrars on the RAA on Monday. Is it Monday? The informal. That's a practical way to do it, in addition to just sort of talking to people and informally. And similarly with some of the GAC members. I mean, if we've had expressions of interest, why not do that? I mean, I'd be interested in hearing from Alan maybe something around the IP constituency, if you think there are, you know, particular initiatives you guys are undertaking with them, or, I mean, the other obvious.
Thank you, Joy. No, I completely, of course, agree to the principle of increasing inter-constituency, inter-stakeholders group collaboration. I think it's not so much the constituency as the individuals in the constituencies that we would partner with. So, I don't think I have any specific suggestions, really. It has to be analyzed a little bit from the strategic objectives that the stakeholder group wants to achieve.
Thank you, Alan. Would anyone else like to get in the queue on this point? No? All righty. Then let's move on to the next issue on the agenda, which is the review of ICANN policy input opportunities and discussion of possible statements of NCSG members. So first we'll talk about the topics in Thursday's public forum and try to get some discussion, policy discussion going about where are we coming from on these issues? Is this something that we really care about, that we want to make a statement on? I don't think we can it would be very difficult, or it doesn't have to be anything like an SCSG statement or a constituency statement. I'm really talking about us as individuals going up to the microphone and making statements. So the first issue is new GTLDs, which is such a huge issue here this week. What are there things that we want to say at the microphone that we want the board and the community at large to understand? What are our concerns about these issues? What is it, the message that we have that we want to bring to the table on this issue?
So let me just, I realize it's a very broad issue, new GTLDs, but let me just open it up and start there. What are the things that concern people on that and they would like to make a statement on or would like to hear, have some discussion about considering a statement? Anyone? Yes, Adam.
Adam Peake. There's been a lot of concern, and this is a sort of very high-level comment, I suppose, is on the failure of the outreach and communication plan that we are concerned, or there has been concern raised that the number of applicants from developing and emerging economies is particularly low compared to North America and Europe. And whether that's something that concerns this group, I don't know. But it's something that we hear a lot throughout the community at large. So it may be something to echo, reference in some way.
Thank you. Yes, Bill.
We expressed concern about this, about the possibility of this happening in the council. In the run-up through the process, we expressed concern about it all through the JAS negotiations. We expressed concern about it after it happened in the ALEC meeting yesterday, and we discussed the possibility of whether we would want to have any kind of a joint statement with ALEC on this. So yes. There are concerns, we definitely, I think it's reasonable to say that this is a missed opportunity to try to diversify participation in the TLD space, and that if you actually look at the breakdown, most of the applications are from OECD countries, and a lot of the even the European ones are actually American. They're Amazon and so on, and the very few that are from developing countries often have linkages to the north. So there has been a real, I think, a systemic failure. Whether that's and certainly the outreach strategy was a failure. Just sending Rod around to have photo opportunities with prime ministers was not a way to not a way to try to broaden engagement in the space. And it's not at all clear what kind of work the staff has really done. And this is one of the points I would like to raise with the board today when we talk about globalization and outreach is exactly what did the staff do in terms of bringing information about this. I thought the redesign of the website to make it really feel like a corporate American website, you know, like a business website rather than an international body, was kind of unfortunate in this regard. I don't think that helps. So I don't know what they really did, but clearly not enough was done. It may well be that there is not substantial demand out there in the developing world, but there certainly are businesses, one can also argue people just think there's better uses for their money. But it's also possible to imagine that there are communities and companies in developing countries who might well have wanted to take advantage of this, especially if they could have applied for JAS.
Yes, Alain.
Yeah, I'm Alain Béranger. I would agree with the last two speakers. Yes, like you said, Bill. But one thought, maybe what is it that we can do about it now? I mean, looking at the facts, there was only two deeper subject workshops on this program, and they occurred in North America and Europe. So, you know, we missed a chance to get some data. We should have, should have done some workshops in the other regions. In the point I want to make is that there's no lack of money and interest and certainly technical capacity some of these countries. And I was just, I'm not a technical guy, so I don't know if it would be possible to actually have another call limited to the developing emerging countries. But I don't know if that's even technically possible. The other thing, I was disappointed, of course, with the only three JAS applicants. And the one point I would make, though, is that in some of the applications right now, I'm discovering little by little at this meeting and doing some research that they are not-for-profit organizations that have applied for these GTLDs. So maybe we can... it would be good if we knew who they were. I know that, for instance, Dot Quebec will not is the ISOC society with public funding behind it, and that surplus will be redistributed to underserviced area in our large province. So anyway, just wanted to add this to the information.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else want to get in the queue on new GTLDs, something that they want to mention, an issue of concern? Yes, Adam. Microphone, please. Bill, could you hand that back? Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Adam Peake again. Yeah, that was something to follow on from Alain's statement, that it's not enough to just complain about it again, but to try and think what solutions might be. And I suppose a starting point is to actually evaluate or ask for an evaluation of what the communications and outreach plan was, if we can have some detail of it, and then probably to think about how do you go forward to evaluate whether people in developing countries were aware of the plan and what awareness they do have, which is a sort of marketing research oriented. How do our entrepreneurs in Africa, how much awareness do they have of ICANN, how much awareness do they have of this plan? Is there potential interest in TLDs? I don't know how you actually express that, but I think there's two phases for it. The unfortunate thing is we don't actually know if there is demand within developing countries because the outreach plan was poor, so it didn't tell us you don't know because there wasn't really outreach. So perhaps had there been a good outreach plan, there may have been more applications, but we don't know that because the outreach plan was poor. So how do you move that forward is a question that would be more useful, I suppose. Can't quite express what I mean, but I know what I mean anyway.
Thank you, Adam. Anyone want to get in the queue on this? Well, one of the things we talked about in the policy committee meeting the other day on new GTLDs was concern about objections coming forward, either from the independent objector or from somebody who just doesn't like a word or doesn't want to have a word allowed in the. In the root. And so one of the things we talked about was really trying to keep an eye on these kinds of objections and perhaps countering them where appropriate with some freedom of expression statements and, if you will, support for an application that is being criticized as being an inappropriate word or concept or idea in certain countries. I know there's several applications for .gay. There's some thoughts that governments will object to that, .sex, .sexy, and then .catholic in various languages. There'll probably be some fights over that. So I think that just keeping an eye on the objections and sort of from a human rights freedom of expression perspective, keeping an eye on that and weighing in where appropriate. Okay. Anyone else want to say anything on new GTLDs or has some thoughts? Yes, Joy. Can we have a microphone over here, please?
Just one other point that was made to me just in the corridor yesterday about the new GTLDs was whether or not NCSG had any concerns about applications for generic words, particularly, for example, .family or .books, or which might close off or limit otherwise free expression. So quite apart from, particularly where these were being sought by brands, and it wasn't something that we discussed in a policy committee meeting on Monday, but I just think it's interesting that people are wondering what we've got to say more generally, and we might want to put that in the mix in our work on GTLDs.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yes, Wolf. It's right here, Wolf.
Okay.
You know, another point is, you know, before the whole process started, we had long discussions about categories. There were several proposals to have categories for cities and regions, for brand names and all this. This was rejected because it was said, you know, it's all GTLDs. In particular, Steve Crocker was very against this categorization. It's partly reflected in the guidebook because you have for, you know, some special things like regions, you need a letter from the administration. So that's okay. But now we have the 1,900, and it would make sense, you know, probably to go through the applications and, you know, that, let's say after the event, you know, to try to put them into different categories, because I see huge differences between applications from brand owners, applications for generic names, applications for cities and regions, and for communities. At least these four are very clear categories, and probably, you know, we could think about also then a differentiated treatment of these categories, because certainly from the non-commercial point of view, GTLDs, which represent the public interest, you know, could probably get priority, you know, against others. So I don't know whether this would find consensus, but anyhow, you know, it would enrich the discussion.
Thank you. Yes, anyone else want to get in the queue on this? I know another thing that was concerning was the size of the independent objector budget that has been proposed by the by ICANN. I believe it's $25 million, and there's a lot of concern that with a budget that size, you know, there's going to be pressure just to have to justify that budget and come up with objections in order to, you know, be able to justify that high of a budget. So that might be something we might want to raise with the in the public forum as well, as concern over the independent objector, the size of it, and hoping that he won't be bringing frivolous and arbitrary objections. It seems that with such a large budget, it almost encourages people to contact him to file objections. Yes, Adam. Can we get the microphone back here? Wolf, Bill, one of you? Okay, thanks.
So I'll try and be clearer this time. Following on from Joy's point, in the GAC, one of the GAC members mentioned that taking a generic term and sort of proprietizing it as the ownership, sole ownership of a company, perhaps that fails a public interest test, as the GAC and both the ALAC have a right to object on public interest grounds. So that might be something for this community to think about, for us to think about. Do we believe that that is public interest? Is taking kids into the proprietary ownership of a company a failure in the public interest? I don't know. But it might be something to consider, because certainly the ALAC and the GAC have that right or the potential to object on those grounds if we want to lobby them on it, etc.
Lobby them to object. That's our new world.
Not quite freedom of speech that you started this with, but never mind.
Anyone else? Anything on new GTLDs that we might want to have said in the public forum this week? No? Yes, Bill.
I just want to ask Adam about his view on this, because let me lean real close. And here we go. Adam, I know that there's been a lot of discussion about this topic and articles and Circle ID and so on. In the applicant guidebook and in the discussion process in the council, there really wasn't a lot of thought given to that particular issue. And so some could argue that after people have bid big bucks, we would be effectively proposing to change quite a bit, were we to now say, oh, by the way, we consider this entire category of behaviors to be not in the public interest. So I recognize the concern there, but I wonder if, on given the way ICANN's processes are, we might not put ourselves in an awkward position that way. What do you think?
That's
think it's going to be a very awkward position anyway, because you're talking about having about objecting to applications from two of the largest companies in the world in our sector. So if anybody, including the GAC, wants to go up against Google and Amazon, then they're going to need a lot of courage. But I don't know. I don't think we ever have ever defined what the public interest is within ICANN, but it has been raised many times, and so I don't think it would be unreasonable to have that discussion. It doesn't mean that we've decided one way or another what it is, but it's the GAC and the ALAC have the potential to make an objection on those grounds, so it's probably something that the group should be interested in. You know, we should at least consider it, otherwise we're not going to influence their, or have the opportunity to influence their decision on this. ALAC being particularly, I don't know, possibly flaky on it. Oh, I'm on the record saying that as an ex-ALAC member, but never mind. Thanks.
Well, my concern is ICANN trying to define the public interest. I mean, this is not the place. If you want to have those kinds of matters decided, I mean, this is such a corporate lobbying and governmental, this is just my personal opinion, view that it would do more damage to try to say, oh, it's inappropriate for a company to have the word kids on the internet. I mean, did we really think we weren't going to see these kinds of applications come forward? Of course, I mean, all along we knew this would happen, and now people are like, well, gee, that's not in the public interest, so we shouldn't do that. So I don't know. I think that it would be more harmful for ICANN to start going around making claims about what's in the public interest, and I think that, you know, that's more appropriate at a national law level, and if, you know, things are legal to do, well, then I think we should probably let it happen and not try to start deciding, you know, who is more appropriate than someone else to use the word kids on the internet. But that's just my view on the matter. I would be curious if others wanted to get in the queue on this issue. Joy? And Mary?
It's just a very quick question, not actually even answering your question, Robin. I was just thinking of what Adam said. Isn't it far more likely that should this be an issue that begins to trouble a few members of the GAC, and we know that it has, that rather than objecting, or rather than even being very specific in terms of what they might want to highlight, they are going to use the phrase global public interest. We've seen them use it more and more in the last few meetings without defining what it is, but do so in the form of a letter to the board or a form of advice, and basically saying something like, some of us are concerned at some of these applications because it might result in a generic word being monopolized by a very large company. Please do something about it, which is not an objection. I would think if the guy is going to act, that's the kind of thing they're going to do. I could be wrong.
Joy?
Thanks, well, Mary. Yeah, I mean, I'm relaxed about objections in principle. I think if we feel strongly that there's a public interest that we think needs to be protected, whether it's free expression or some other, then we should be thinking about how to let that our views be known about that. But what I think we discussed at the NCDSG Policy Committee meeting on Monday was developing an issues paper that we would submit during the public comment period that would highlight some key aspects around freedom of expression and human rights that we think should be taken into account round, and taking some examples of applications where we think these are pertinent. So I don't think we need to discuss and agree on, you know, dot kids or whatever, but I do think we need to position ourselves in relation to what we think are the factors around public interest, as we discussed on Monday.
Thank you, Joy. Anyone else have anything on new GTLDs? Okay, let's move on then to the next issue. On
the Thursday's public forum topic, the globalization of ICANN. And I know this is something that the stakeholder group has cared a great deal about, trying to encourage ICANN to be more global, to have more participants from outside of the U.S. and Europe, diverse voices, new voices that haven't been here before, trying to reach out to these new communities and new interests in bringing them in. So are there thoughts, people have thoughts of things they would like to hear or have said on the globalization of ICANN? Anyone? Rafiq, did you have something on that one, globalization? Because I know you have some opinions.
I don't have a voice.
But you don't have a voice because he's a little ill. Okay. Did you want to say something or no?
Okay. We had the possibility with outreach for GNSO to bring more people, to make international, but I think the globalization for the ICANN is not just to bring new members to the community, but the structure of the organization itself, and the staff, and the board, and even how it's operating. Like, for example, they have the global partnership, which means like kind of regional manager in each region, but it's not enough because there is not enough resources. Like in Africa, for example, to cover the whole region, and so that manager cannot, for example, to be in touch with the civil society. She can only really focus in the government or CCTLD. So we have that problem, and that's why also I said about the staff, more staff with this international experience, so that they can understand better. I have the feeling that the ICANN is still United States dominated, culturally dominated structure, and how I saw how the outreach for the new GTLD was done, it was just the result of such culture. So how we can change this culture is to bring at least new people, new mind, new way of thinking. And I'm sorry again.
Thank you, Rafiq. Are you okay? Okay. Yes, Wolf. Bill, can you hand that microphone over? Thank you.
I think the issue of ICANN internationalization or globalization is on the agenda since more than 10 years. Under Paul Twomey, there was first the idea just to open offices on different places, the home place of Twomey in Sydney and Brussels, but this didn't really change the situation. Then there were several committees, presidential committees. There was a high-level strategic presidential committee. And there was another working group on the internationalization of ICANN. But all this, never led to some very concrete conclusions. Globalization in the eyes of the outgoing CEO was, traveling around the world, meeting prime ministers and saying, this is ICANN. So, but this did not affect, obviously, really the nature. So ICANN is still treated by many groups, and as we heard in yesterday's open discussion, as a California-based U.S. private corporation, which is bad for ICANN, and which is also not the truth. The truth is that de facto ICANN is international, but a lot of people do not see ICANN as an international corporation. So one of the ideas was in the working group where a couple of members, I think Lindsay Bucher was in it and somebody else, came out and said, to have, let's say, another ICANN incorporated under Swiss law or in Brussels or elsewhere as ICANN International. So because for a lot of parties in ICANN involved is, the problem is that if they have a conflict with ICANN, they have to go to a Californian court. And that's why, they refer to the Californian Incorporated Corporation. So that means to have an alternative would, you know, be an interesting way, you know, to offer, let's say, in cases of conflict, an alternative to go to a Swiss court or what else. So, but anyhow, you know, with a new CEO now, I think time is ripe to make this as a big issue. And probably, you know, it could be a proposal from the non-commercial stakeholder group to, via the GNSO Council, you know, to recommend to the new CEO to establish a special working group about ICANN internationalization. So it's not enough to do outreach meetings and to tell prime ministers or even local constituencies that ICANN is a great thing. So that means something has to be changed structurally, you know, to make ICANN more international. And it's not enough to open just an office. So, and we had different ideas on the table, so we compared, irony, you know, the ICANN with the IOC or the International Red Cross. So, and we came to the conclusion, so this is probably not a good example. But anyhow, you know, something new has to be developed. And in so far, it's always good if you have no answers at the moment, then create a working group and let give the working group a clear mandate that they come with concrete proposals. And the moment of a new CEO is a very good moment, you know, to encourage him to move forward in this direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Wolf, yes, Elan.
Yes, I wanted to add just a solution. We do have the resources that we have, and outreach is not sufficient. But we should also in our outreach we should use that to promote the internationalization of ICANN. So small steps brings you up the Kilimanjaro. So it's not because we can't make a big. It's got to be. It's a mindset change. It's a cultural change, or from an organizational point of view. And I think we have to show in our outreach that we are really truly favoring that. So holding our meetings in developing countries and bringing developing countries experts to the panels and will at least increase the. Will internationalize the communities.
Thank you, Elan. Anyone else have anything on globalization? Okay, then, yes, Adam?
Sorry, Adam Peak again. The at-large has produced this paper, the R3 paper, Bringing Respect, something and something, and another 2 hours to ICANN. Sorry, I can send that to the list. But one of their recommendations, and this doesn't quite go as far as Wolfgang's proposal, but might be a start, is that the board's Global Relationships Committee be open to non-board members. So if the at-large is going to propose that, then we might say we support that. It's a minor beginning, but it's a start, and it fits.
Thank you, Adam. Yes, Bill.
I asked the board that at our last meeting with them in San Jose. And as we talked about in the meeting with ALAC again yesterday, so we are starting to get into some deja vu conversations, we indicated again that we certainly would favor that. So if we would like to do something jointly with ALAC on that, we should do it. We should do it quick. I'm undoubtedly will probably raise the point again this time. I mean, we've had, I think, 3 or 4 meetings now with the board where between NCSG and the board where we've talked about globalization, and I've asked them about that committee and its work and how people can participate and gotten somewhat abstract answers, but it does seem that there was a growing recognition, particularly among Bertrand and maybe a few others, that they should think about how to involve the community more in what they're doing. We all have a strong interest in these matters. We're all involved in internet governance discussions elsewhere where the question of the organizational form and whether ICANN should be some sort of different organization with a host agreement in another country and all that, and et cetera, could be pursued. And so, I mean, certainly I'm happy to continue to raise this question. And I would think NCSG has not actually written anything about it. We've just kind of said it to people. So if people want to actually make a statement about it, I would certainly participate in doing that.
Thank you, Bill.
Drafting, in other words.
All right. Anyone else? Okay, then let's move on to the next topic. Who is review team final report? That's on the on Thursday's agenda. Yes, Wendy, did you have something you wanted to say? Or were you stretching? Did I misunderstand? There's a Wolf. Could you? Or yes, thank you. We need a microphone.
I think we submitted comments raising significant human rights and privacy concerns against the Who Is report when the review team put it out for public comment. And we put those in by reference when the board put this out for public comment. I think it's useful for us to go to the microphone and say two things in here, because the board is asking how should these things be implemented, or at least it's asking some people that, as well as I think they should be asking, should these things be implemented? So I'm intending to say both they should not be implemented, and if they should be implemented, that question should come to GNSO Council for policy development, because these are not mere implementation of defined policy, but rather policy that has yet to be defined.
No. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that, Wendy. Really appreciate that. Anyone else want to get in the queue on the Who Is review team final report?
Actually, if I may ask, since there is a period of review comment, reply comments open, I thought there were excellent comments submitted by the registry's stakeholder group and by Andrew Sullivan as an individual in the initial comment period, and I would like to propose that NCSG submit a comment endorsing those as well.
Great. Thanks, Wendy. Anyone else? Seconds and thirds for Wendy's proposal. Any objections? Hearing no objections. Okay. The next issue. Balancing the capacity of volunteers and ICANN staff versus the workload and demands. This is on Thursday's public forum topic. So does anyone have anything they want to say on how we can what we can tell ICANN to do to help better balance the capacity of its participants? Yes, Wendy.
Well, I might suggest that we somewhat hijack this topic to raise another one that I think we need to inform the board about, which is the deadlock in the GNSO Council. So I think it's related that a lot of the reason that workload is piling up is because the GNSO Council is non-functional. And I think that's a result of the so-called improvements that silos the voting into stakeholder groups and houses and fixes the place of the NOMCOM nominating committee appointees. We hear elsewhere in that some people think that the review should be delayed and because the face of the council will change. I think that we need to change the council before we, or at least simultaneous with getting new members in. Otherwise, it will be non-functional with more people, and those people will just ignore it, go elsewhere. And since the way that, or the primary way that non-commercial stakeholders affect ICANN policy is through the GNSO Council, we would benefit by having a functional council that could make consensus policy.
Thank you, Wendy. Yes, Avery?
Yeah, I want to endorse that and add to it. I think part of the reason is that, and so I'm definitely in favor of a review on the GNSO Council because, to my naive observer's eye, it is badly broken. And I think it's broken for a couple reasons. One, it's broken because of the silly oppositional structure that's made there to actually create opposition as opposed to create working together environments, the ability to build consensus, as our new and future CEO says. It's broken because it's got too many people in it. You know, it's broken because it forgot what its new job was. Its new job is not to continue to try and legislate, which they're still trying to do. They've got working groups for that. Part of the review is going to need to look at the GNSO. The working group structure that has been coming in, working groups are getting work done. Working groups are sending things to the council. The council is then looking at it and say, but that's not what we would have done, forgetting that the bottom-up structure has sent them stuff, that the council's new job in this reorganization was to be, was proper process covered? Were the people, you know, was everyone duly represented, et cetera? They're not supposed to be looking at issues and saying, do we agree or disagree? That is no longer the G Council's job. And so I think we may need another review to, first of all, get rid of the silly structure of oppositional houses, to go back to the simplicity of, you know, 3-4 representatives from every stakeholder group, because we also solved the problems that we used to have of, you know, we wanted to get rid of proportional voting, so we put in a silly structure that encapsulated proportional voting by having twice as many members. But then we realized that didn't work, and so we put in various voting thresholds that, and then all of a sudden we could have realized, gee, we could have worked with a smaller council, 3-4 members from every stakeholder group, really purely administrative function to make sure that we start working groups, that the working groups are run properly, and that, you know, and then pass the things on. And the voting thresholds could still apply to that smaller council. Yes, you need at least one from 3/4 of the SGs. Easy. So I think that a review is necessary. I think that the representational balances have to be fixed on it. And I think that it's especially important that we somehow in this review convince the G Council that they are not a legislature, that we really don't care whether they agree with what the working groups come out with. They just have to make sure that the working groups did the work properly.
Thank you. Yes, Mary? And then Wendy? And then Bill?
I agree with just about all that's been said, at least generally. I agree, having been on the council for 4 years and probably in, at least in its recent history, probably through its most dysfunctional period, it needs to be looked at in the context of a review of the entire GNSO bicameral structure. And I assume that if we make these comments, it's going to be directed towards the board's structural improvements committee or whatever committee it is that does this thing. With respect to what else Avery had said, and this is in no way different or disagreeing with the point that's just been made, in terms of the number of people, I guess I would be a little wary about talking about reducing numbers, just bearing in mind the fact the bitter fight we had to get 6 people on. I know the point there was to get parity with the commercial stakeholder group, but maybe we don't need to get into those specific details at this point because of that background issue. Then I think in terms of the council being a legislature, I'm not sure what the problem there really is, because it may just be that people or groups are gaming the system. Not that there isn't a problem, but maybe we're looking for a problem in the wrong place. Because if you think about how each group votes, I mean, we talk about it, and then we decide how to vote, and by and large, for the most part, our councillors tend to vote, you know, in a block. And that's been, I've been told that that actually is a very powerful signal from our group, 6 of us voting the same way. But we also know that the registrars, for example, and the registries, their councillors vote as directed by their constituency. So at a certain level, we could say, well, the council isn't a legislature, because any questions it asks or any opposition it raises is at the direction of its stakeholder group or constituencies. I don't really think that's always what's happening, but that's kind of like the first and immediate answer. So I think if we want to raise that point, we might need to figure out a way to raise it that doesn't attract that immediate knee-jerk defensive response that then drops the issue.
Yes, Wendy. Thank you, Mary.
So a question for Avery. What is the council to do when it looks at the work of a working group that was clearly misrepresentative, that one or more constituencies failed to participate for good or bad reasons, and the group then comes out with a skewed recommendation? We've seen this against non-commercial, that we simply didn't have participants in a group, and so it came out with something crazy, such as the registrant obligations document that's been held up as a model for the registrar accreditation agreement amendments. It was a bad document. We tried to stop it at the end because it didn't represent our interest, because we hadn't been able to participate effectively. Where would you suggest we fix that?
Me again. I think that partly being an administrative and having the liaison function to these working groups is you're supposed to, as a council, notice that. You're supposed to notice that as the working group is going on, as you're getting the status reports and you're asking about the representativeness. It's not waiting until the end. You know, in the case of that group, you know, we were at fault. We knew about the group. We didn't participate. It should have come up in G Council that, you know, such and such a group is not represented. Make sure they get there. Make sure it's happening. You should send things back to groups if things come out as not representative and sort of say, we're looking at the attendance sheet here. We're looking at who participated. There was no, you know, non-commercial. There was no registrars, there was no whatever. You send it back to them and said, work on it some more because. And so it comes out very similar, but it's really directing the working group to do its work correctly. That's what I recommend you all do.
Okay. And then, Bill, and then let's move on to another topic.
First of all, let me say how happy I am that we're in a room with windows. This is... It just occurred to me, wow, I'm not falling asleep. And that's usually at this point in the day, constituency day, I'm losing it. You know, I completely understand the points that Avery's making. I did have the same kind of concern, though, that Wendy raised. And I hear your answer, but the answer sort of seems predicated on the notion that we're going to always have the people to get into these processes and do it. And sometimes we just don't. So we have to. Well, you know, we have a real problem with mobilizing bodies. And in a way, the fact that something comes back to the council is kind of a last check, a last possibility to make sure that people who have been objected, the people who have been elected to represent the stakeholder group, make sure they get a look at it, and so on. So the question whether the council's broken, like Mary, we've been on this for the same amount of time. We've watched it fail to take decisions a lot of times, and it's easy to say, sure, it's broken. At the same time, I also think it's simply reflecting the fact that there's fundamental divisions in the whole community, that, you know, the state, there's just different interests. And those interests, I'm not entirely sure whether if you were to reconfigure the structural organization of the process or change the voting thresholds or have a slightly different composition, you'd still have the same fundamental divisions. And, you know, at some point, the people are going to deadlock on things. So at which point then the board gets to make decisions if it has to. So, you know, to me, not
Non-results are results as well. If you start from the position that, God, I'm pissed that this council can never agree on anything, then it's easy to be pissed all the time. If the council, in fact, fails to do something, then I think that accurately reflects where the community may be on something. And then, you know, that becomes fodder for the ultimate decision. So if we want to press for another relook at the council after all of the stuff we just went through, we can do that. But I'm not sure if at the end of the day we end up someplace a lot better. It's hard to imagine what they are. But I'm totally open to the idea.
Okay, thanks, Bill. And then Mary's got something to say, and then we're going to have to move on to
other
issues.
Less than 1 minute. So two things. One, picking up on Wendy's suggestion of hijacking that topic, might I suggest that we refine it a little bit and pick up on something the council spoke to the board about on Sunday or whenever it was, about this fact that the council is being bypassed, and we offer the perspective that the council or the GNSO is being bypassed because the GNSO simply can't make any decisions. I think that really is the substance of the point, and perhaps a review could be illustrative or useful, but that really is the basic point. Then I wanted to make one suggestion for us as a group that, you know, if we are shepherding motions or suggesting working groups, that when we are gearing up to do that, we line up people within our group that say, you know what, if it comes at an opportune time, I'm happy to volunteer for it, so that we know we're going to have people on those groups when they are chartered, for the most part. I think that we haven't done that in the past. That should be something that's relatively easy to do. And obviously, we're not going to do that for every single IRTP working group, probably because we don't care mostly about IRTP, mostly. But for things like some of the other working groups, I think if we can say we've got someone, so if our councillors propose that motion or support that motion, we will be represented in that group.
Great. Thank you very much, Mary. Okay, we're going to have to move on and skip ahead in the agenda because we will be meeting with the board. and so we need to, this afternoon, and so what we need to do is we need to go over some of the topics that we want to talk to the board about. So let me skip ahead to the prep for the NCSG's discussion with the board of directors. And there were three topics that we proposed to them, and there was one topic that they proposed to us, and then they've also got a few topics that they proposed to all the SGs. And the first topic that we proposed was developing a human rights impact assessment for ICANN policy development processes. And so I was hoping that, Joy, would you, Rafiq, could you pass that microphone down there? If Joy could speak to this point.
Sure. It really picks up on something that we talked about with the board last time. We met with them in Costa Rica. And I've been reflecting that we should try and sort of focus this discussion point a little further beyond the general topic. And in particular to highlight the proposed workshop at the IGF on ICANN public policy and human rights, and call for or invite the board to participate in that. And I was hoping, Carlos, that you might like to perhaps raise that. Thank you. And secondly, I think it might be worthwhile just to reflect back to the board some of the specific discussion we've had here since on the listserv in the last few months about the idea of an input into the public comment period on new GTLD application round on some applications, the one that we mentioned earlier. So in other words, just to basically focus on a couple of specific things, invite the board to actively engage in the IGF aspect and signal that we are, you know, offering a practical input on this topic, so that we don't get into a sort of a general discussion about human rights and ICANN, which I think would be not the best use of the time.
Great. Thank you for that, Joy. What do others think? What can we say to the board? What's the message that we want to bring to them this afternoon on human rights? And I really appreciate Joy's opening up this discussion. Anyone? Wolf? You usually have some...
I'm sorry, yes.
Yes, sorry, I just forgot to mention that the other suggestion that had been tabled was that we encourage the board to consider ICANN becoming a member of the Global Network Initiative, even in an observer capacity in some way.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Anyone else? Bill?
I support the Global Network Initiative concept, and I wanted to just point out that it's occurred to me that for the past hour, it's been all counselors talking mostly. So I'm wondering whether there might be some other folks in the room who'd like to. This is open to everybody to participate. And I wonder if there's some other views we might be able to get on some of these issues. If anybody's interested.
Anyone?
Human rights, anyone? Should I can be engaged? Care?
All righty.
Have an approach?
Then. Okay, hearing no other views on the issue, let's move on to the next issue. Yes, Bill.
Okay, then I will just say, we have to nail this down a little bit more because, Steve's going to look at us and say, well, so what exactly do you want? So
that's why we're having this conversation. So,
and we've been saying to them for a while, to some of us it's entirely obvious what it means to talk about human rights in this context, but for a lot of people in this community, it's kind of like a new language. And so, can you give one or two operational, it would mean doing X and Y's kind of things that we could suggest to them?
Well, I think in terms of applying to be part of the Global Network Initiative, I think that's a very practical thing they can do. It's specifically designed piece of, it's a initiative that flows out of the work that's been done at the Human Rights Council in the United Nations, which has looked at the role of the private sector and the rights, the responsibilities of the private sector in relation to human rights, and is a constructive initiative and framework for those corporates that have public policy responsibilities or transnational operations to positively affirm and engage with the human rights framework. Google, for example, I think is a member. Facebook is an observer, and ICANN is a public interest corporation. You know, is a private corporation doing public policy work, and it's an entirely appropriate avenue for it to consider. And in relation to the other sort of practical suggestion in terms of inviting the board to have input into human rights discussions in other fora that are looking at how human rights get taken into public policy, that's the rationale for the IGF workshop suggestion. I mean, I'm appreciate your point, Bill. I'm loath to get into sort of discussions about what are human rights and so on at an esoteric level because I think that gets murky. But I think definitely practical suggestions and items of policy where they're currently relevant, such as the RAA in law enforcement, who is verification, amongst other things, and the new GDLD rounds are quite practical examples of things. I mean, I think that's plenty to get through. I wouldn't want the issues to be out of proportion in the board discussion to other topics that are equally important and pressing. But also if other people have other ideas or thoughts about examples that would be useful, then it would be good to hear them.
Yes, Bill.
It seems to me that if you say you want an impact assessment, you're asking them to establish a mechanism which will involve staff resources and focused energies if the concept is that this would be completely community-based, I don't know what, but
I think the PDP process that's been revised includes a requirement for an issues report that looks at, amongst other things, human rights. Rights-related issues, and I think that what we're suggesting is that in order to put some capacity within ICANN behind that, they need firstly community inputs so that they can be looking at what rights issues are, where they may have there may be a lack of knowledge about them. Beyond that, I'm not aware of any specific request for ICANN resources or to the board for those. But, I mean, it's open for discussion.
Okay. I just wanted to point out, I mean, are you thinking of the kind of thing like the Council of Europe adopted that statement on human rights and choice in new GTLD string? Are you talking about that kind of an assessment? Assessment of name choice? Because that might be something to point to give them a for example.
Are you talking about the Council of Europe declaration of ministers on freedom of expression and domain names? Or I'm not sure
which one you're talking about.
I'm very loath to do that because I think that ICANN is not a human rights standards-making body. I think that was a very clear message that we got from the last, you know, from the discussion on the listserv. But rather that in making decisions as a matter of public policy, they take those into account in their process.
That's what I meant. I didn't mean that ICANN would be adopted.
Okay, yes, Wolf.
Probably we can make a concrete proposal for the Toronto meeting. So we have a rather established workshop every ICANN meeting now on internet governance, which is well attended. There was more than 500 people in the room yesterday. Why not to start a similar workshop on human rights and ICANN issues? There are at least two ongoing processes in ICANN which raise fundamental human rights issues. These are the RAA, contracts, privacy, and the new GTLD program, that's free speech. So it would be perfect just to have a workshop where we discuss the issue, where ICANN provides the space and said we have to be aware, because this is also awareness building on human rights dimensions of all the other private corporations which are working around. It's not enough. If ICANN joins the GNI, there are a lot of others, VeriSign and others, which would be also good members of the GNI. And, you know, this could be because Steve thinks in concrete categories, and if we say, you know, please, next to the Internet Governance Workshop, have another workshop on human rights and ICANN issues. This is a very concrete proposal.
Great. Thank you for that. Anyone else have anything on this topic? Are we comfortable with... Yes, Carlos, please, come get a microphone.
Thanks. The logistics of the room are not there very much to facilitate the comments from the ones who are in the back. But we were behaving. I can guarantee you that. So just to give a concrete example, when we were discussing the new GTLDs program, I would say like 2 years ago, there was this huge debate on morality and public order. And at that time, ICANN has requested for some experts in different countries to provide a report on standards for, I would say, exceptions to free speech on international level and in the national legislation level. So the experts that were hired were law firms that contributed to this debate, but it's, I think, clear that in a situation like this one, when you are proposing to create a system like the new GTLDs that will have this greater impact in free speech, that will be a good example. There was staff involved with that, with a long process that resulted in a document that was one of the documents that was the grounds, the basis for the system of the new GTLDs that have been approved. So this is the kind of situation in which a human rights impact assessment could be useful, to have the situation in which you're going to have a review on the national level or either in the international level, but to have altogether with this this reviews system that is already in place, as well a proposal for a human rights impact assessment. This is just to give a very concrete example from the past, like it's a recent past, like from, I would say, like no more than 2 years ago, that could have been useful to have a debate on that. And of course, ICANN is not a human rights policy-making body, certainly, but the effects of the policy that are approved here is very clear that they will have impacts on human rights. So I think that's the kind of language that we could communicate to the board later today. So that's it.
Thank you very much, Carlos. Anyone else? All righty. The first topic that the board sent to us to discuss is a continuing discussion from the previous meeting with them, both at the Senegal and this is their question. Both at the Senegal and Costa Rica meetings, we heard reports from you on the NCSG's organizational matters. We recognize that there are ongoing discussions on various administrative issues, including any issues with your two constituencies, NCUC and NPOC. Can you provide us with a status update on your organizational efforts, including progress approving new members? So, from my view, I think we've made a lot of progress. We've continued to make progress. We've approved a lot of new members. We've got some applications pending. NPOC has some applications pending that they're not sure where they are, and so we need to track them and figure out where they are. It's not really clear, but we're working on those and we're working through those. So I think the message is really very positive that we've made some progress. Although we have had a couple of hiccups, we had a member of the intellectual property constituency, the lobbyist for the Olympic Committee, has tried to join NCSG a bunch of times with a bunch of different organizations and, you know, basically wanted 12 votes in NCSG. And we didn't allow that. The NCSG Executive Committee didn't allow that. These organizations, non-commercial organizations, are welcome to join. They just can't be represented by a member of the intellectual property constituency. So that was one little hiccup that we had. But other than that, I would say things are moving very well and pretty smooth. And let me just bring Al on up because we want to. And then, but I have to ask you to keep it pretty short because we've got Kathy and Patrick from Google who have just come in to give us a presentation.
No, I think you've captured the status right now, and we're working very hard. It's not just NPOC that doesn't know where the application is; it's also you, and so it's our ability to track what's pending and what's not, what has been actually evaluated and what has not been evaluated. So we need to put out that positive statement because that's what it is. It's we're working on it, and it's not that easy.
No, but I think you're right. We are making progress, and there will be issues that will come up and will continue to come up. But I think we can work through them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I won't comment on the Jim Bykoff case because it's a member or a potential member that went directly to the to the chair for a complaint, and then this issue is in front of the ombudsman and causing you and I extra work. So, but that's only it's under 5% of our membership applications right now.
Great, thank you. Yes, Avery. Microphone right here. Bill, could you hand that over? Thanks.
I want to ask a question about that, because I want to ask if we actually think it's appropriate that we seem to keep coming up with this burbles because...
What?
With these burbles, with these... Burbles, you know.
What's a burble?
What's a burble? It's a thing that's going wrong, and it's a burp that comes out as a mumble that comes out as a burble. It's a burp. It's basically we keep having these glitches. How about that? A word that we all know really well. But we keep having these glitches in this membership thing that gets blown up because, A, we forget that people have to join the NCSG before they join a constituency, and B, that we keep having people that decide that the way to approach something is to immediately escalate it to the chair of the corporation. So I'm wondering if there is some way for the stakeholder group and for the two constituencies to sort of act in concert to sort of say, hey, folks, we got a way to handle problems. We got a way to review things. You know, we got a process. You join the NCSG. You join the other constituencies. And if you got a problem, we've got an appeals mechanism. It bums me out that no one has tried the appeals mechanism first. We got all these people that have problems, and yet no one has, you know, use the appeals mechanism that we got. Somebody's got to appeal something. So I keep seeing this, and I wonder, how do we not have it happen time and time again, that somebody tries to go around and it gets, you know, it becomes an ombudsman issue, it becomes a chair of the corporation issue, it becomes a glitch. Thank you.
Thank you, Avery. Yes, Elan.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Avery, it's really, we need to have less noise about it, because we only have one, call it a rogue case, okay? So I don't know how David manages authoritative issues with his constituency, but I recommended to Jim Bykoff not to complain to the chair. And his choice is to take my advice or not, and he did not. Of course, I end up with a whole bunch of edicts about it. The problem with the issue with all the other pending mentorship is really not an issue. It's a matter of us working out administrative issues under very limited resources in terms of doing Excel tables and getting people together and so on. So we need, as a stakeholders group, to reduce the noise on this, and just let this one specific issue be handled by the ombudsman, because we can't control it.
I'd love to hear you say that to Steve when he brings up the topic.
It would be good for the... To Steve Crocker, the chairman of the board, in today's meeting with them.
He knows that my recommendation to Jim was, I'm repeating it wherever I need to, including to Jim.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. We've got a quick 10-minute presentation, and then we'll get back to the other issues. I have to do it this way because our guests here, our presenters, are scheduling. They're going trick or treat today to all the various stakeholder groups, and this is our time. So
can I just, while you're sitting up, Joy here?
Yes.
Can I just say we have to actually be down at the board meeting down on the lower level at 3:30. So, we're watching the time. Okay.
For anybody who doesn't know me, Kathy Kleiman, and with all the other groups we visited today, this is, of course, home for me. But
one of the founders of the NCUC.
And I am, my current coordinates are as an internet counsel with Fletcher Hilden Hildreth, a firm in Rosalind, Virginia, just across the water from Washington, D.C. And I'm working on a project with Patrick Ryan of Google, and he's actually going to introduce it for us.
Hi, thank you so much for making a little bit of time for us here. We really appreciate it. My name is Patrick Ryan. I'm with Google. I'm in the public policy team in Mountain View. I've been with Google for about a year and a half. This is my first ICANN meeting. Before joining Google, I split my time as a telecommunications lawyer and teaching at the University of Colorado in Boulder. One of the things that I'm working on this year, one of the most important projects, is inspired by the discussion that we've had a lot here, and that happened yesterday during the session on internet governance, and that's the treaty conference that's taking place this year to change the international telecommunication regulations. It's culminating in December in Dubai, and it could potentially have a number of impacts on the way the internet is governed. Moving the internet from a multi-stakeholder model, which includes ICANN, the participation of civil society and the voices of many in the internet, to a more centralized structure. Now that may or may not happen in December. There's a lot of opinions, and I think there are a lot of good discussion around that. But there's no question that there's a trend to centralize control, to sort of seek out a central internet authority, so to speak. And that would choke the voice of civil society. One of the topics that I have recently written about is in fact in a paper that I co-authored with Jacob Glick on the need in this international telecommunication union process to make sure that the civil society's voices are heard, and are really part of the process. So, short story long, we are working on a storytelling project, and I'll let Kathy talk a little bit more about it here in just one second. In essence, it's to address the many concerns that we hear from stakeholders, particularly government stakeholders outside of the United States, that are very concerned about the perception of U.S. control of ICANN and of various different aspects of the Internet. And so rather than just sort of telling people that that isn't the case and writing more academic articles about it, we want to have you and the people that really helped develop this system here talk about it and tell stories about the value that it's brought so that we can then show those to others. We're going to put it up on a YouTube channel that we're going to dedicate to multi-stakeholderism. So with that introduction, we'll have some opportunity for questions in a minute. I'll let Kathy talk about some specifics.
Patrick's covered most of the ground, but it really is about shedding some light on this ITU versus multi-stakeholder discussion that's taking place. In the last few weeks, I've attended a number of hearings and luncheons and discussions and conferences talking about this in Washington, D.C. And I have to say, when they talked about the multi-stakeholder model, I didn't recognize anything that they were talking about. It was kind of the 1,000-foot level. And I wrote to Vint Cerf, and I said, Vint, everything's great that's being said. It's right, but it's not tangible. It's not personal. I said, the Prague meeting is coming up. Is there something we can do at the ICANN meeting where we can help explain in different voices, in different languages, from different perspectives, what ICANN is and why it's valuable and why we do what we do and why we think it helps contribute to our communities, to our countries, and to the Internet generally? And Vint introduced me to Patrick, and we have a videographer coming. We have a shoot going on for 12 hours tomorrow. In another life, I'm a documentary producer, but don't tell anybody. And we have a shoot going on tomorrow, and we would love to invite you to join us. We've got some slots for tomorrow, and then we'll be continuing this via webcam. And as Patrick said, putting it up on a YouTube channel and sharing with the world what we do at ICANN and why we do it. And, of course, couldn't imagine not coming to Robin and to you. So thank you for the time during very, very tight schedules today.
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you, Patrick. This sounds like such a very exciting project, and I'm sure many of our members would love to be involved. So thank you for bringing it to us.
Thank you so much for making time. We appreciate it.
Do you have a second for questions, or should we keep going?
Okay. We really don't. I'm sorry. We have to meet with the board in a few minutes, and so we
Good
have
luck
to.
With that.
Yeah.
thank you.
Thank you.
Just raise your hand if you want a card, and then you can write to me or I can.
Okay, we've got a couple more minutes here before we leave, and we need to go over a couple more issues that we need to talk to the board about. The second issue that we proposed, the topic that we proposed to the board was including privacy concerns in law enforcement discussions and including privacy commissioners among law enforcement perspectives in ICANN policy discussions. And I was actually going to ask Avery if she could give us her views on this or encapsulate sort of your impression of the stakeholder group's views on this and what you think we ought to say to the board this afternoon.
I wasn't listening when you started, and now I forget what I said I would talk about.
Including privacy concerns in law enforcement perspectives.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah,
you can do it in your sleep.
I need that cue. I just forgot which of my many topics. And as I've spoken at a couple things, basically, for most countries these days, you have a privacy, you have a data protection officer that is defending the privacy of people within the country, is as important as any of the law enforcement. And basically, the humorous way I put it is, I think it's humorous, is that you should never talk to a law enforcement agent unless he or she is handcuffed to a data protection or privacy officer. Because anytime you talk to just one of them, you are only getting half of the story, and so I've been pushing basically on in all of these issues, whether it's RAA, whether it's who is, whether it's any of those, that they really have to hear both sides of the story, and they're never hearing both sides of the story. Now, ICANN has finally woken up and sort of said, oh, privacy officers, we didn't know where to find them. So, you know, I think that something that we can help do is we can help people find the data protection and privacy officers. I think it was Kurt on the stage yesterday on RAA that sort of said, yeah, it'd be good, we're just confused about it and we don't, you know, really know. So I think that's one of the reasons why this group has to, you know, not just the single voices here that have been pushing it, but as a stakeholder group, really take up this issue and sort of say, we understand talking to law enforcement. However, you know, you need to also get the other side of the national policy. I think it's important that the civil society, you know, privacy people contribute also. But, you know, that can always be discounted as that's just the privacy nuts. But when it's the government's own people, when you have the FBI and you have, you know, the administration's representatives for privacy speaking, then you're getting both sides. So that was the quick part.
Great. Thank you for that. Yes, Adam. And I just want to remind folks, we're meeting with the board in 10 minutes, so you've got 30 seconds.
I would connect what Avery just said to the WHOIS review, which seemed to me to be very much focused on discussion with law enforcement officers and law enforcement, rather than balancing that with an equal level of discussion with the privacy protection officers who should be handcuffed to them. Yeah, I mean, there's a much more stronger emphasis on the review discussing with law enforcement than they did with the equivalent privacy protection officers. So that seemed to be missing and might be worth connecting. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so David, you've got 30 seconds.
Won't take that. Just on this issue, are we going to discuss with the board? We should tell the board that we are planning to send letters to privacy authorities.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, we should... I don't think we should surprise the board with that. We should be pretty clear.
I think they would welcome hearing from privacy commissioners. I don't think it's some, you know, surprise.
No, I'm just saying we... but we should... I think it's one of those things. We should make sure the board are very clear what we're doing.
Okay, thank you for that. The other issue that we proposed talking to the board about... my schedule here, is globalizing ICANN and outreach to developing countries and underserved communities. We've talked a lot about that this week. Bill is going to be our primary, our discussant with the board on this. So, Bill, if you want to give us 30 seconds for what you want to say to the board on this.
Same.
Okay, we've all heard Bill all week, apparently. And then there were some... issues. So you're just going to wing it, is what you're saying. You're just going to say it, what you said. Can you give us 30 seconds what you're going to tell them?
Okay. We can talk about various different levels.
New GTLD outreach failure concerns. What ways?
Okay, thanks, Bill.
Ways to do.
Okay, all right, thanks for that. The other issues that the board will be asking us in 5 minutes are the RAA negotiations. I know we've got things we want to say on that, and I know Wendy has been following that issue with great regularity. So Wendy, you want to give us 30 seconds for here's the microphone right up here.
Yes, and I just want to raise a timing issue. The only time that we were able to get time to meet with the registrars is in the first half hour of this slot. So if it's possible to push this question to the second half when I can rejoin you.
Okay.
As I discussed earlier, the point I will raise is we need to hear from privacy authorities. We need to incorporate the privacy concerns, and we will be bringing them to you.
Great. Thank you very much for that. Okay. There was a couple other issues. Batching. They want to talk to us about batching. They want to talk to us about the WHOIS report. They want to talk to us about budget and ops plan cycle. Yes, Mary. Can we get a microphone to Mary? Thank you.
I don't have a, I'm not suggesting that I want to lead this because I don't, but I've been following the board's discussions with the other groups on this, so I just want to give us a taste of exactly what they want. I think you know this, right? On batching, they want to know whether our group thinks a consensus is forming around a single batch going through. And there's a couple other associated things, but that's the primary issue. So I guess the question is yes, no, we don't know. Think about it.
Yes, we do, in my view, personally.
Right, and it might be a question of how we do it internally, but the question is whether it all goes in one batch or is announced in one batch. Then the other thing about the Who is Review team, I think one of the questions is what are the appropriate things that should go through a GNSO PDP? What is implementation? What is not? That's a more complicated question. And that if that's our answer, that's essentially the specific questions they want to know.
Great. Thank you very much for that, Mary. Yeah, when it comes to batching, they say, what are your views on having a single batch, and do you believe there is anything approaching consensus? What is the acceptable time frame in which to do a single batch? If there is to be batching, do you believe there is consensus that a method other than DA, oh, I guess that's digital archery, should be used? So that's what they want to talk to us about. Okay, so we really do have to close this meeting down now because we need to be there in 4 minutes. Thank you all. Please, let me just look on the schedule. I think we're over in Congress 2. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Joel.
Great neck cherry.
Jesus.
I was just going to move this along. That's fine.